The next case is 06-1025, Norfolk Southern Railway Company versus Homer Bogle. I don't have anyone checked in to represent Norfolk Southern Railway.
I represent Norfolk Southern, Your Honor, Kevin Alexander.
Our rule does provide that you must check in, so we know you're here. I couldn't pick you out of a crowd, frankly.
I apologize, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Your name is Alexanderson?
Correct. Justice and Chief Justice Moyer, again, my name's Kevin Alexanderson. I represent Norfolk Western Railway Company. This case gives the Ohio Supreme Court the further opportunity to assist in the resolution of the asbestos problem in the state of Ohio. Specifically, by applying House Bill 292 to railroads, this will further reduce the number of non-malignant cases lawsuits pending in the state of Ohio. These non-malignant or unimpaired plaintiffs will have the opportunity to pursue their claim after the sickest plaintiffs' cases are resolved, that being the lung cancer cases, the mesothelioma cases. This ruling will also be consistent with the legislative intent of House Bill 292. The application of this section of the statute to the railroad is procedural in nature and not substantive in any manner. It does not impinge on any aspect of the FELA or the Locomotive Boiler Inspection Act substantive law.
Counsel, I've been wondering since I read your brief, if that is your argument. It's purely procedural.
Correct.
Well, then how does the legislature have any authority at all? We decide procedure.
Well,
by our rules.
Your Honor, I think that there, in this case, if you look at the legislative intent, it was looking for a way to control the problem.
If it's procedure, then we have to adopt a rule.
Again, Your Honor.
How can you have it both ways?
Well, I think that the legislators has promoted procedural rules in the past. I agree that the Ohio Supreme Court has initiated procedure. But again, going back to legislative intent.
You've read the Modern Courts Amendment, surely.
Your Honor, I've not read the Modern Courts Amendment.
It's like 30 years old.
Well, Your Honor, I can tell you that I am familiar with the legislative history and what the intent of what this bill was to do, and it was in response to a problem in the state of Ohio and all the resources that we.
Well, I understand, and it may be a noble solution, but if it's procedure, then it's a court rule, isn't it?
Your Honor, at this juncture, I'm not willing to concede that because I believe when the legislature.
Well, if it's substantive, then it's the legislature.
Well, I think that the Supreme Court is going to address the issue whether or not it's substantive or procedural in the Atkinson case that will be heard, I believe, later in June. This is a very unique case in that we're only asking that a limited portion of this statute, i.e. the minimum medical criteria, be applied to the railroad. That's what was briefed in the trial court and also in the Court of Appeals. And that's the extent of it. There are other portions of the statute that clearly don't apply to the railroad or the FELA. I'm here today to address what was addressed in the 8th District, the minimum medical criteria relative to its application to the railroad. And indeed, a parallel to this is in the federal MDL. Judge Wiener has a similar order that was been present for 10 years to prioritize and implement the docket. And that's been upheld, and it hasn't excluded FELA cases in the least. We have to remember that in the FELA, there's concurrent jurisdiction. You can bring it in state court and federal court. In this case, they decided to bring it in the state court system. Without question, substantive law applies, but the state of Ohio's procedure should apply. If this case was filed in Judge Wiener's docket in the federal MDL, similar rules would be applied. And again, the parallels between House Bill 292's minimum medical criteria and the federal MDL are basically the same. Prioritize claims to ensure that the sickest plaintiffs get to the courthouse first. Secondly, to maintain the funds of the defendants. As this court is well aware, there have been 71 bankruptcies of various companies, many of those in the state of Ohio.
Counsel, I think we're well aware of the merits of trying to prioritize. That seems like a worthy goal. The question is, and Judge Hanna, very in a short entry, found that the FELA controls and this statute does not. The Court of Appeals found the same thing.
Well, but they, one, they never addressed, you know, they never got to the heart of the issue that this is really procedure. There's nothing in the statute that affects the burden of proof of the FELA, liability, damages, quantum of proof. The Locomotive Boiler Inspection Act, again, governs railroad safety, railroad appurtenances. There's nothing in that statute that's involved in this appeal that affects any substantive element of the FELA or the Locomotive Boiler Inspection Act. Those duties are present in those cases.
Mr. Alexanderson, is there any other state that's dealt with this issue where other states may have enacted minimum medical criteria for asbestos cases and are attempting to use it in an FELA action?
You know, there are other states that have promulgated legislation. I'm unaware of any states that have addressed this specific issue regarding the FELA. I'm sure it has to be addressed for the simple reason the concurrent jurisdiction issues. You have to remember what happens a lot in these railroad cases is that plaintiffs sue both the manufacturer and the railroad. They split their causes of actions and they forum shop. That's exactly what's been occurring in the state of Ohio. You've had forum shopping that's occurred, and you've had numerous plaintiffs come to the state of Ohio to pursue their claims. And again, not applying this to the railroad, circumvents really the purpose and intent of the FELA. The FELA's intent was application of uniform substantive law, application of the state's procedural law.
Well, counsel, you went on at length in your brief about forum shopping and how evil that is, but asbestos cases are complex cases. It would seem the reason that many of them go to Cuyahoga County is the Chief Justice set up a procedure for handling those cases with judges who know something about the issue and getting them resolved in an expeditious fashion.
Justice,
that probably can't happen in a lot of courthouses.
Justice, in all due respect, I believe that an asbestos claim is just like any other product liability case. I think that any justice, any judge can assimilate the material and can move forward on these cases. I think what the Supreme Court tried to do was noteworthy to try to get a handle on these cases. But what happened here, since the time of that appointment in roughly 97, your docket went from a few thousand over 45,000. And what happened was you were getting plaintiffs with absolutely no nexus to the state of Ohio filing here. Case in point, in these cases, these men lived in North Carolina, worked in North Carolina, were allegedly exposed in North Carolina, and at the time that they worked, the railroad had absolutely no presence in the state of Ohio. There's absolutely no reason why these cases should have been filed here. Again, goes to the next point that in federal court, they recognize the doctrine of forum nonconvenience. State courts can accept or reject that doctrine because it's procedural in nature. And unfortunately, insofar as the Cleveland asbestos docket is concerned, they have rejected that doctrine. We've been up here and tried numerous times to get the forum issue before this court. And again, most recently with the rule change, some of those things have abated.
Doesn't Section 2307.93 B and C give the trial court, in effect, the ability to dismiss a claim that would substantively affect the claimant?
Well, as I understand the application of this rule, it's administratively dismissed. So as long as it's filed and they can meet the minimum medical criteria, it will come back on the active court trial court docket. So the idea is that if the statute of limitations had expired at the time that case was filed, the railroad could still pursue that because they obviously didn't file it in time. What the purpose of the act is to administratively dismiss them, and if they're filed within the statute of limitations, all rights are preserved.
Well, administratively dismiss is a nice term, but it's a judge dismissing a case, isn't it?
But it's not dismissing
it for the
purpose.
Subject to refiling.
Well, it's not dismissing the case pursuant to 41A.
Putting
what
it on a
is,
different docket.
It's an inactive docket. You meet the medical criteria. You can come back. This is exactly what's been going on in the federal MDL for 10 years and ongoing, approximately in the federal district court, maybe 3 or 4 cases a year are activated. They're typically malignancies, and they proceed through the process. Not to say that an asbestotic claim, you make an impairment issue, you prove proof of exposure to asbestos, will not be activated. But again, it goes back to the heart of the purpose of the statute, to prioritize those cases.
Well, should our determination of whether a statute is procedural or substantive be based on the fact that, or be based on whether the statute reflects the federal statute? Is that a way to determine procedure versus substance?
Well, I think it's an excellent example of what's ongoing to handle a problem. Again, whether or not the exact issue of substance versus procedure wasn't addressed by the trial court, wasn't addressed by the 8th District, and again, I think is going to be more aptly addressed for the totality of the statute in the Atkinson case. But I think it's very important to look at that MDL statute or the MDL handling of asbestos claims and see that it's upheld itself for 10 years. It's a solid system, and the reasons why it's in place is substantially similar to House Bill 292. True, it's not as detailed as House Bill 292, but it's doing the exact same thing, and again, is indicative of it being procedure. So
Judge Hanna concluded in his opinion that this House Bill 292 is preempted by FELA. And if, in fact, there is a dismissal that can be administratively administered by a trial court judge, why wouldn't that substantively affect the right of the claimant, at least insofar as the ability of the trial court to adjudicate whatever motions or claims might be then pending? Why wouldn't that be a correct statement that the FELA preempts the adjudication of these matters? What is your best argument on that?
You have to look, is affecting a substantive right? And the fact that these are placed on an inactive docket and they can meet the criteria, or if after the malignancies are heard, can be placed back on the trial docket, all defenses are preserved and all claims are preserved. So it's just, you're prioritizing. So you're not affecting any substantive elements. You're not affecting the statute of limitations.
Well, if nothing's being affected, then what does 292 really do? I mean, I think there's 42,000 asbestos cases pending right now on that docket in Cuyahoga County. So of the number staggering cases that are pending there, to administratively say we're dismissing this case, or to say today we're going to hear that case instead of this case, how does that impact the railway company?
Well, what it does is one, you have to, and I'm looking at it from both the plaintiffs and the railroad. One, you have to remember that
Represent themselves. You can just represent the railroad.
What I'm looking at is the fact that there's terminally ill people, railroad workers, those cases will be heard. This statute does nothing to affect any of my common law defenses or any of the substantive law. If when that case is activated, I have a statute of limitations defense, i.e. he didn't file his claim soon enough, I can pursue that claim. I can pursue all defenses. So again, all it is a timing element. And again, when that plaintiff can meet the criteria or all the malignancies are resolved, you can go forward and move forward on that claim.
But if the rights of the parties are determined by the FELA, why doesn't that preempt the trial court from dismissing a case or?
Well, again, it's not dismissing. They're inactive, and again, going back to the statute, it can be activated. Should you make the requirements? But there's nothing in that statute.
So this administrative dismissal comes by way of a journal entry?
Yeah, I believe it's just placed, or they're placed in a state of on an inactive docket. What they've been as a listing of cases that are inactive, that's still on the court's docket, And then the court, and then what you would do, you petition the court that you've made the, met the requirement, or again, after all the malignancies are resolved. There's nothing in that, there's nothing in 292 that addresses any substantive aspect of the railroad.
But in effect, isn't that really happening now anyway, because a trial court with 30,000 or 40,000 of these cases pending simply takes the cases that are ripe for adjudication and adjudicates those claims, and then the ones that aren't fully discovered or the ones that aren't prepared are left until such time as the discovery process is completed?
Again, that's prioritization of claims. There could be railroad claims that are set forth in those malignancies. There could be non-railroad claims. And again, the way the procedure is plaintiffs name their malignancies. Typically, they'll put a list of five or six mesothelioma lung cancers together. There's a railroad docket that will move forward on those malignancies, but again, it's just a timing issue and a prioritization issue. And again, if you look at the statute, it's devoid of any type of language to regulate the substantive law relative to the FPLA. I thank you for your time, and again, I just would ask that you reverse and remand the decision of the 8th District and apply the minimum medical criteria to the railroad.
Thank you, Mr. Alexanderson.
Thank you very much.
Appellee has not timely filed a brief, and so oral arguments waived. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.